This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 30th of April 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 29th of April 2021, which this week has been edited by Sue Frain, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas. Your reader today is Richard Martin.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are New Park and Ride May Face Action, Brave Lily raises thousands, and unviable care home set to close. So we will start with the story behind the first headline,
which is New Park and Ride May Face Action. Winchester City Council has been warned it could be taken to court after plans for a new multi-storey car park were approved. Campaigners had pressed councillors to change their mind over a new 287-space car park on the former Voltec site in Barfield Close Bar End. They said the structure, which will stand 15 metres above Domham Road, will impact the environment, residents and a South Downs National Park walkway. But at a planning committee last Thursday, seven councillors voted to approve the proposal, whilst one abstained. On behalf of Domham Road residents, Ian Ford said, "The council has completely failed to recognise the off-site implications of the proposals and leave themselves open to a legal challenge. The car park would see an 800% increase in vehicle movement in the area, and we feel the council has failed to notice the operational impact of cars moving round an open-sided building. No reports consider the impact headlight pollution, blasting into neighbours' bedrooms, illuminating the national park and bat roosts. Many nearby trees have been confirmed as habitat for bats, and bats can't fly in light over one lumen. The average car headlight outputs around 1,500 lumens. This is potential crime against wildlife. James Miller, representing Extinction Rebellion, Winchester Action on Climate Change and Friends of the Earth said the council would be hypocritical to approve the plans. To say that a park and ride is a priority in action against climate change is simply a completely illogical statement and a complete misunderstanding of what is meant by a climate emergency. A park and ride does not reduce carbon emissions, and it's well understood that it does the opposite. It increases care use rather than embed the idea of car use. It increases car use rather than embed the impact of public transport. The council objected over the plans to expand Southampton Airport due to carbon emissions, so it would be hypocritical to build another car park in the city. Ward Councillor Fiona Mather also objected to the plans at the committee. But Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Lead for Service Quality and Transformation, justified the need for the car park. He said, "Our officers, who we trust very much, say that these plans are in line with the movement strategy. It's important that we think about producing ideas to improve air quality in the city centre. We have the objective of getting people to visit and use our city centre so it can continue to thrive. But there's no view in the strategy that doesn't include people from outside the city from coming to work, shop and enjoy the city. I'm personally very committed to getting people to walk, cycle and use public transport, but I don't see a future where those people come from the greater district won't come in personal vehicles." Councillor Todd shared a presentation to show how high the park and ride will stand over Domham Road. He said it will not appear as high as the former Vortex building did, as the council has worked to set it further back. The multi-storey will feature green walls to offset carbon output in the area, as well as screens to limit light pollution from car headlights. Councillor David McLean also said the car park should be locked up when closed to prevent antisocial behaviour. and toilets should be included in the plans to ensure the site doesn't turn into a pit.
Brave Lily raises thousands. This Winchester 9-year-old is in the middle of a grueling treatment plan for a rare form of cancer. Yet, using her very little spare time between hospital appointments, Lily Lomas has raised thousands of pounds for charity. The schoolgirl, who lives in Berwick Avenue with her mum, dad and two siblings, first noticed a lump towards the end of 2020. A small lump had appeared on Lily's legs in September last year, which grew rapidly, said her mother, Kirsty Lomas, and she had no other signs of cancer. It has been called an undifferentiated soft tissue sarcoma because it's so rare. Even sarcoma specialists around the country don't know what type of sarcoma it is. Even after a biopsy last November and removal of the sarcoma in March. Since her diagnosis, Lily has seen more than £11,000 in donations. Last week, she hosted a bake sale, which raised £1,681. Lily's blown us away with how she's taken it all on her stride. She's absolutely amazing and so matter-of-fact about it all. She doesn't realise how brave she is, and she is almost always still has a smile on her face. Kirsty continued, Another thing has been how really lovely it is how much support we have had. And there are pictures of the family, and I say they're all smiling, so it's quite a lift, and well done to Lily.
Unviable care home set to close. St John's Winchester wants to close its specialist dementia care home in Moorside in Winchester city centre. The charity has announced a consultation to shut the home and use the building for other uses, as reported in the Chronicle last week. St John's says it will seek the views of resident representatives, families and staff, starting on May the 10th to finish by mid-June. Moorside, situated on Derngate, only opened in 1996, but has become unsuitable for modern care, says the charity. Chairman of the trustees, Roger Bright, in a statement said, "After considerable thought and discussion, with great regret, we have concluded in principle that providing dementia care at Moorside is not viable in the medium and long term. There are two principal factors driving this. The first is the significant reduction in our investment income caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, which is likely to be a long-term impact. The second is the limitations of the building itself. Its scale, design and configuration result in high staff costs, which are incurred to support the delivery of the best care possible to those living with dementia and having high-level nursing needs. After careful deliberation, we have therefore reached an initial in-principle decision that our care at Moorside is not sustainable in a charitable context, and accordingly are launching these consultations, including as to an alternative future use of the site. St John's plans to retain the site and proposes to build up to 18 new almshouses, subject to planning permission, which would provide fully adapted accommodation for older people of limited means. This would provide a sustainable future for the site and allow older people to enjoy the many benefits of living in the city centre. St John's has stressed that no final decision on closure will be made until the consultations have taken place. If the closure goes ahead, every effort would be made to work alongside Hampshire County Council to help residents and relatives find an appropriate alternative home. Clive Cook, Chief Executive, said, "Sadly, the pandemic has undoubtedly had an impact on the economy and the health and social care sector as a whole, and unfortunately, we have not been immune. We are determined to do all that we can to support every single individual and their families throughout this consultation process and beyond, and look forward to a constructive dialogue with families, their representatives and members of our staff." Out of the charity's proposals, the new almshouses could be opened in 2023. This would follow the expected completion of 15 new almshouses on St John's Colebrook Street site in the early summer of 2022.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Burns, Simon James Burns, on the 23rd of March, aged 54. Isaac, Diane Janet Isaac, on the 15th of April. Mason, John Mason, on the 24th of April, aged 90. And next we have Christian Comment,
which comes this week from Nigel Hemming, and is entitled Children First. While the pandemic has affected everyone in one way or another, our younger generation have really missed out during this season, and not just educationally. According to Mental Health Org UK, many children and young people have likely experienced loneliness during lockdown, and in particular have been affected by lack of physical contact with their friends, families and peers, and the boredom and frustration associated with the loss of all the activities they've been used to taking part in. Many of us who are parents have felt concerned about our children's lack of motivation, about the effects of so much screen time, and how they're missing out on relationships, and what impact all of this is having on their emotional and spiritual life. It's a good time to be reminded about the vows we make at the dedication or baptism of a child. As well as giving thanks for the gift of a new life, parents promise to pray for their child, to set an example of belief and faith, and to trust God for the long-term growth of the child's relationship with God. Trust is all about making choices to believe, even when the circumstances don't look like favourable, and for some that's a very real decision in this season. Many churches are currently working through the practical challenges of how to gather young people together safely and legally in a way that's also going to be fun and meaningful. Restrictions do look like easing soon, but in the meantime, the challenge is to recruit a vibrant team of volunteers with vision and energy to invest in the younger generation. This is tricky when so many people are exhausted and in need of a break themselves. In Matthew 19, Jesus places children front and centre, and it feels like this is a time for the church to do the same. This might cost us something, but it will be time and energy well spent as we follow Jesus' example. At a dedication or baptism service, the wider church promises to uphold, support and encourage the new child and their family as they grow. In the Old Testament, family often refers to the extended clan or wider community, all of whom share responsibility to communicate the faith of the tribe to the young people of the tribe. It's like the well-known proverb, "It takes a village to raise a child." This season feels like a time to make good on the promises prayed over countless children in their infancy. If those who have time and energy to spend can make themselves available to invest in the next generation, imagine what value that places on the young people in our communities. It might be an informal offer of prayer or support to a busy family, or volunteering to help restart young people's groups in your local congregation. What if the message our children hear in this season is that we care about them and their emotional and spiritual growth? Often it's our actions that speak the loudest. Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
Next we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so either by telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8 AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. The first letter is titled Leisure Centre, and it's from Peter Rees, who is a Labour candidate in the Hampshire County Council elections, which are coming up next week. Sir, local Liberal Democrats are doing their best to convince voters that the new leisure centre is an achievement. Behind this inflated and grandiose opinion, the real truth about its existence is quite alarming and a lesson in misrepresentation. In 2018, the Tories agreed a confidential contract and admission prices without consultation, discussion, oversight or scrutiny of the decisions. The maximum uplift in prices promised by centre owners Everyone Active was to be 15%. It's now at least 40%. A passport to leisure card was to be introduced, but has not been heard of since. Over 400 swimming lessons undertaken by a highly reputable and professional local club, Penguins, has been cut, and they have been excluded from using the pool. A joint advisory board was set up. It has never met or operated to consider proposals. An open forum for questions and answers was convened. The outcome was a staged managed body where questions were asked but very few answers given or actions taken. Winchester City Council have been told by Everyone Active what they can have, not what is best for the community. No proper democratic consultation and no one bothering about engaging and listening to the reasons why local people should be involved. This project has been cloaked in a total lack of transparency, with insufficient and inadequate community engagement carried out in complete secrecy to deny the community a role in decision making. After Everyone Active won the bid, they stipulated a 15-year contract or no deal. The whole enterprise is now completely beyond any local control whatever. It is a purely commercial contract based on profit entirely going to Everyone Active. Winchester City Council and the community are excluded. Behind the glossy front and false promises, this travesty represents an extremely poor example of how little the Lib Dems really care about the electorate. So that letter was from Peter Rees, member of the Winchester constituency Labour Party and a candidate in the Hampshire County Council elections. And his address is Monarch Way, Winchester.
Terry Gould urges innovate city. So, council elections, lots of leaflets and slogans about what has been achieved, some, and what to achieve, lots. Meanwhile, the climate emergency looms and not much is being done by the council to offset carbon and to change the pattern of what we do. Why can't Winchester emerge as a bold leader and innovator? And where better to start than central Winchester regeneration, including changes to the High Street and the Broadway? The central Winchester project needs bold vision and leadership. Make the space exciting and full of green plants. Make it enjoyable, healthy and fun. Invest with the county in the new technology. Solar, wind, hydrogen-fueled electricity throughout, an enlarged fleet of clean hydrogen-fueled buses. Trees, lots, water. Don't waste money and time on little nibbles like a makeover of King's Walk. Get on board a proven, bold urban designer like Thomas Heatherwick's London projects and make central Winchester into a beacon showing what can really be done. Copy, if necessary, some of the excellent Scandinavian ideas for a better environment. Other development areas will follow when it is seen what can be done. If there isn't sufficient expertise and willpower in our senior officers, create a citizen group from Winchester's many talents and raise money privately to help out. Above all, get going. Let Winchester be a wonderful example of what can be done and especially help to counteract the climate emergency. Terry Gould, Fairfield Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Next, we have two letters about the Voltex plan. This is the multi-storey car park at bar end. The first letter is from James Miller. Sir, Winchester City Council approved a new multi-storey park and ride site at Bar End. They state that the Voltex Park and Ride is a priority action on the Carbon Neutrality Action Plan. But this statement is completely illogical. It demonstrates a deep misunderstanding of the approach required to address the climate emergency. Park and Ride does not reduce carbon emissions. In fact, it is well understood that it does the very opposite. It increases carbon emissions by embedding car use rather than public transport and active travel. To make matters worse, the embodied carbon from the construction of a building that can only ever be used as a car park will lead to further unacceptable and unnecessary increases in carbon emissions. The council objected to the expansion of Southampton Airport on the grounds of increased carbon emissions. It is therefore extremely hypocritical to approve a new car park that will also significantly increase carbon emissions. Moreover, in the Council's Carbon Neutrality Action Plan, they're committed to assessing every major project for carbon emissions. This did not happen. No assessment whatsoever was completed. The Council has declared a climate emergency. Now was the time to act accordingly, and they have failed on several counts. So that letter was from James Miller, Wheatland Close, Badger Farm, Winchester. And the second letter on the same subject is from Simon Lever. Sir, the height of the former Voltex store at Bar End is already imposing. Spending £5.6 million on a massive 15-metre structure to house 300 cars lacks common sense. Further, it would overlook an area of natural beauty and be too close to houses along the Itchen navigation. Is essentially unacceptable. How many years would it take via parking charges to pay for such a £5.6 million construction? Further, the idea that 240 jobs would be created towards one employee per car is sheer fantasy. I suggest civic chiefs reconsider this development that would overlook the iconic Itchen for the sake of such an unnecessarily high and extremely costly project. The original plan for a 123-car facility is more feasible. Back to the drawing board. So that letter was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Angie Wilkinson proposes a Greta statue. So I was zapping to find something on TV and decided to watch the BBC One programme Greta Thunberg, A Year to Change the World. I'd seen the statue outside Winchester University and read what people had written to complain about it, so I thought it'd be interesting to know more about what Greta is trying to do in this world. Having lived in the Far East, Europe and Latin America, I can understand some of the disasters of climate change that Greta's talked about. She's trying to get world leaders to do something before it's too late. I and many others are concerned for the young and their future and were surprised that the students at the university complained about £20,000 statue. Don't they think she's doing an amazing thing for the youth of today? Doesn't she deserve recognition and publicity? If the 8,000 students at the university had contributed just £2.50 each, they'd have covered the cost of the statue. Or is it that they'd prefer to have half a pint of beer and some crisps at the pub across the way? Angie Wilkinson, Eastgate Street, Winchester.
The next letter is from Jamie Walker, and it's about the tip at Alsford, and it's entitled Pre-Booking Works Brilliantly. Sir, I refer to the campaign to remove the pre-booking system, Chronicle, April the 22nd. Personally, I'm 100% for it and don't see the problem. The system works brilliantly. It's quick and easy online. You know exactly when you'll be able to access the centre and there are no queues. Bearing in mind that there are only two spaces within the centre, if we return to a free-for-all, there will be a queue back down the road and probably into New Farm Road. Even if the original parking spaces are reinstated, all five of them, one of which is for disabled, I fear it will make little difference. There was always a queue outside before pre-booking was introduced. We all have better things to do with our time than sitting in a queue at a recycling centre. While I accept pedestrians, cyclists and mobility scooters are excluded, with respect, I cannot remember ever seeing any of these at the centre before lockdown, and there's really not a lot of recycling items any of these would be able to carry. Surely a helpful neighbour with a car would be willing to take such items when they are visiting. Now that letter was from Jamie Walker, Jacqueline's Lane, Alsford.
And this letter is called Crime Shock, comes from Tom Moore. Your article on page 2, April the 15th, entitled App Reveals Unsafe Streets About Risks of Violent Assault in Winchester, came as a bit of a shock. The map showed more than 20 locations recording violent crime. Then I thought of 20,000 police cut nationally in the last 10 years under what claims to be the party of law and order, not to mention most youth clubs closed to save money and so on. The Daily Telegraph reported, police drop 8 in 10 burglaries. That was April the 17th. And 250,000 break-ins are abandoned by police. Well, you do get what you pay for, and maybe it's worth thinking of a change soon. The police crime and commissioner elections on May the 6th might be a good opportunity to say enough is enough and vote for someone who is actually qualified and not just looking for the next step in their career, whether they have suitable experience or not. Best demonstrated by facing the public before the elections alongside the other candidates so their competence can be judged. Tom Moore, Bassett Gardens, Bassett, Southampton.
A letter from Henry Mead about Debenhams. Sir, turn the old Debenhams building into a covered market? What a great idea! Especially if there is encouragement for small specialist retailers, for this will greatly enhance the tourist trade. My only concern, though, is that Winchester City Council do not have a reputation for timely decision-making, as exemplified by Silver Hill and Station Approach. That was from Henry Mead, Dargates Road, Chatham, Kent.
Karen McCleary writes about the Boomtown grant. Now that the Boomtown Festival has been cancelled for this year, what happens to the £1 million given to the organisation by the government, i.e. you and me as taxpayers, as part of a COVID support fund? Does the money get refunded, as it appears it will not be needed? Karen McCleary, Hook Pit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
A letter from Liz Scott saying, bring back Lido. Sir, following the national coverage of the reopening of the successful Guildford Lido, I would echo an earlier letter in your paper and test support through the Chronicle for an outdoor swimming pool, Lido, which is just what we need here in Winchester. Having grown up in Cambridge with the still current outdoor swimming pool at Jesus Green and swimming in the Cam, Winchester would benefit from a healthy outdoor pool. Couldn't the lid be taken off the River Park pool? And that letter was from Liz Scott, Cripstead Lane, St Cross. And there is a picture there of it, of the original Winchester Lido in Worthy Lane. We had a letter a couple of years ago, I remember, on the same subject about a Lido, and there was a lively discussion among the presenters and the readers as to whether the pronunciation was Lido or Lido. I checked this again, and the correct pronunciation is Lido. We don't have any items of historical interest. Apparently, I hear somebody tells me that the Chronicle staff are unable to access their archive at the moment. But instead, we're introduced. There's an item by Belgarum which is of historical interest. So we'll go to that item next.
It is indeed. It's a Belgarum item, which is entitled Hyde Street, Part of Medieval Entrance Found. You would have thought that roadworks in Winchester would have discovered just about everything in their path, but perhaps not. works at the top of Hyde Street has unearthed what appears to be medieval stones and perhaps part of the North Gate, which was demolished in the late 18th century. Dr. Simon Roffey, reader in medieval archaeology at Winchester University, was an interested passerby recently and took photos of the work. City Council spokesman said, "We're aware of the findings at the junction of Hyde Street as part of the work being undertaken by SSEN. This area falls within a historically sensitive location, and the project is being overseen by archaeological consultants Wardle Armstrong to ensure suitable avoidance of artefacts. A report on the archaeological findings will be produced in due course, which will aid our understanding of the masonry blocks and flagstone surface that were discovered. We believe these to be part of a medieval bridge constructed over the city ditch to the north of Northgate. Once the report is published, we'll be able to share more information on the historic importance of the findings." Renowned archaeologist Barry Cunliffe, writing The Winchester City Wall in 1960s, shed light on the decision to knock down the North Gate and South Gate in 1771. The municipal archives for this date set out fully the reasons for this decision. The lowness of the structure of the arches of the said gates, whereby a ton of hay and a load of straw cannot be brought in or out of the city through the said gates without a great diminution thereof to the apparent loss of the buyer and these commodities, and it likewise has been reported to the mayor and aldermen that from the great resort of carriages passing and repassing the said gates, foot passengers have not only been interrupted by the carriages, but had been in danger of their lives in attempting to go through the said gates when carriages have been passing, especially over Northgate Bridge. Therefore agreed and ordered at by this assembly that the said two gates should be immediately taken down and the materials thereof sold. And we have pictures of the stonework found in Hyde Street, which I find quite hard to describe, because we're looking at pits which have got stones in. But I can see that it's probably of great archaeological interest. Well, there you go.
The Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. Proposed closure of Moorside Care Home. News that St John's Winchester Charity is consulting over the closure of its Moorside Care Home on Derngate will come as a shock to many. It only opened 25 years ago, which for a charity that has been around since the Middle Ages is the blink of an eye. The care home specialised in caring for people suffering from dementia, with a maximum capacity of 31 beds, so shutting it will knock a big hole in Winchester in the provision of care for people with this terrible condition. Dementia is a chronic issue that will become more acute as people generally live longer and there will be a decline in other causes of death, such as cancer. St John's will not have taken this decision lightly, and whilst we are not privy to its financial operation, it does seem surprising that the funding framework makes it unviable. We hope that Hampshire County Council will be looking at the situation closely to see how it can fill the gap. Meanwhile, it is imperative that the people and families affected by the likely closure are the absolute priority to ensure the minimum of disruption to their lives.
So first person this week comes from Khalid Aziz, and it's entitled, "The State We're In." Oh dear, we must be getting over COVID because normal service is being resumed. The PM is under fire because of spending on refurbing his Downing Street flat. £58,000 is roughly twice the average annual wage and a seemingly extraordinary amount to spend on a smallish property that I guess wasn't exactly derelict in the first place. The story gained further legs after the emetic Dominic Cummings' eyesight apparently improved to the point where he could reread ancient texts between him and Boris. Interesting though this story is to the breathless Westminster bubble journos, it's taking up far too much space in print and electronics. Real journalists should be asking deeper questions and foraging for answers on the appalling miscarriage of justice that has befallen over 700 sub-postmasters and mistresses. This cohort is well represented in Hampshire, with Joe Hamilton wrongfully accused of stealing £36,000 from South Warnborough Post Office. Elsewhere, a pregnant woman was wrongfully jailed. A postmaster from Wales lost his house and life savings. There have been suicides, even with the last week's landmark court ruling exonerating 39 of the wrongfully convicted. This miscarriage of justice has a long way to go before it's put right. What happened? Well, a computer system, Horizon, supplied by Fujitsu, said no to explanations about mysterious cash shortfalls. Post Office regional management came down hard. There were accusations of embezzlement, senior management sanctioned prosecutions with the full force of the law. Among the more egregious aspects of the case was the gaslighting by executives along the lines of, "You're the only one who's had a problem, so it must be down to your dishonesty." It's now clear Post Office management knew there were hundreds of similar cases, but in an outrageous example of corporate arse covering, it suited management book to hang individual postmasters out to dry. The then CEO, Paula Vanell, CBE, appointed in 2019 for services to the Post Office, you couldn't make it up, eventually apologised. Ordained in holy orders, she's now withdrawn from her ministry and indeed her lucrative, less than spiritual, non-executive directorships with Morrison's and Dunelm, combined annual pay around £1,020 a year, four times that of a sub-postmaster. That may not be enough to save her soul. The arms of Beelzebub must surely beckon. The current Post Office CEO, Nick Reed, while muttering compensation might be in order, has failed to apologise on behalf of his organisation. No doubt he was guided by the twin dead hands of lawyers and insurers. To say sorry is to admit liability. To admit liability means a bigger payout. The postmaster's cause has been championed by James, now Lord Arbuthnot, one-time MP for North East Hampshire. The compensation bill could run to £400 million. Lord Arbuthnot wants Fujitsu to cough up. He's puzzled after the initial cooperation from the Post Office there was, in 2013, a sudden U-turn. Why? Who knows? But for justice to be seen to be done, all the managers involved, middle and senior, need to be questioned. How did Fujitsu secure the multi-million pound contract for its flawed system? What was the government ministerial and civil servant involvement? What lay behind the sudden withdrawal of cooperation in 2013? This must be done quickly. Both victims and miscreants are ageing. Some have already died. This is one that shouldn't be kicked down the road. In my ideal world, this is a job for line of duties Ted Hastings. "Just join the dots and draw the lines, fella, mother of God." In reality, we need leadership from the top. Boris should stop worrying about Carrie's colour swatches and announce a proper inquiry led by a judge of the calibre of the appeal court panel who ruled Post Office Limited's failures of investigation and disclosure were so egregious as to make the prosecution of any of the Horizon cases an affront to the conscience of the court. Once the guilty are fingered, there should be appropriate punishment. Whose daft idea was it to abolish the stocks?
There are no special announcements this week, but just to say that sunrise is around 5:30 a.m. in the morning and sunset is about 8:30 in the evening. We now move on to items of general news interest. Voters soon to head to polls for Super Thursday. Voters up and down the country will head to the polls in May for the first bumper crop of elections since the coronavirus pandemic hit. Many contests are set to take place on May the 6th, dubbed Super Thursday, including some that were postponed from last year because of COVID-19. In England, voters will be choosing a mixture of councillors, local mayors, regional mayors and police commissioners. Those on the electoral roll in Winchester can take part in elections for the area's city and county councils in just over 3 weeks' time. Voters will also decide who they want to take up the role of Police and Crime Commissioner for Hampshire. The contest was due to take place last year, but was delayed due to the pandemic. With the voter registration deadline looming, we've taken a look at what turnout has been like across Winchester in recent years. Electoral Commission data shows that at the last local council elections in 2019, 89,500 people in the area were eligible to vote, with 39,800 of them returning valid ballot papers. So that's less than 50%. Sorry, it then goes on to say that was a turnout of 44.5%, which was higher than the English average for council elections of only 32.3%. Around 10,000 postal votes were included in the count, while 482 votes were rejected, which can occur if a paper is not marked properly or has been spoiled. Including rejected votes, the ballot box turnout in Winchester that year was 45%. The scale of Super Thursday means that every voter will be able to take part in at least one type of poll, making it the biggest event of its kind outside a general election.
Hospital visitor rules to be eased. This sounds like good news. Strict rules on visiting hospitals are starting to be eased across the county. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs RHCH in Winchester, is reducing visitor restrictions but says strict measures remain in force. The Trust announced the start of a gradual relaxation of the visiting restrictions that were imposed due to COVID-19. Julie Dawes, chief nurse at the Trust, said, "Visitor restrictions are not something that we would ever wish to implement for extended periods of time. Anyone who's worked in the NHS will have seen the positive impact relatives, loved ones and friends can have on a patient. An extra set of eyes, a familiar face and voice. Unfortunately, COVID-19 has necessitated many changes which we didn't think possible just over a year ago. However, as things continue to improve, I'm delighted that effective today, we're starting to ease the restrictions on visiting at Hampshire hospitals. This will be very gradual and may be reversed if the situation worsens, either at the Trust or in the wider community. At first, comparatively little change, but visitor restrictions will be regularly reviewed in line with the government's roadmap, making it critical on the continued success of the national vaccination programme and on members of the community continuing to follow social distancing measures, including wearing masks. All visiting at Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, the RHCH and Andover War Memorial Hospital will continue to be by appointment and in essential cases only, with surgical masks compulsory at all times and the highest levels of hand hygiene. Only one visitor will be permitted per patient at any time, and this will ideally be the same person throughout a patient's stay. No children under 12 are permitted, except in cases where the patient is receiving palliative or end-of-life care.
MP visits hidden cemetery, a special place. Winchester MP Steve Bryan has been exploring the ancient St Giles Hill graveyard. He was invited by members of the Friends of St Giles Hill graveyard to see their work in the cemetery off Alsford Road. They showed him some of the most iconic graves, including a former mayor, someone who died on the Titanic, and the oldest known grave dating from 1694. The St Giles Hill graveyard is not used for new burials, the last taking place in the early 1970s. Mr Bryan said, "I love the place and was blown away by this special place right in the heart of the city. St Giles Hill graveyard is a haven of tranquility, wildlife and history. The team looking after it, led by Anna and David Stewart, are true local heroes." Anna added, "The friends were delighted with the enthusiasm and support shown by Steve on his visit, to this ancient and previously neglected hidden gem that is steeped in local history and the biodiverse selection of wildlife.
Hundreds more rail services are on track. Rail commuters across Hampshire are to share in hundreds of extra services from next month. Southern Railways is among three rail operators planning to add an extra 1,000 services a week as coronavirus restrictions ease across the UK. The changes announced by Govia Northern, Southern and Thameslink come into force on May the 16th. Steve White, Chief Operating Officer of parent company Govia Thameslink, said, "As lockdown restrictions are eased, we are reinstating services for our returning customers. These additional trains will help provide more space on board by adding more capacity on our busier routes at the most popular times. They will also provide more journey choices for customers at quieter times. Social distancing will become more challenging as more people start to travel again, so we'd advise anyone to use online journey planners, which will highlight the busiest services to help you plan an alternative time or route if you can. We will continue to review and increase our services based on feedback from passengers. This will ensure that we continue to support our customers and our communities as we did during the height of the pandemic. Passengers should wear face coverings unless exempt and maintain social distance." A GTR spokesman said, "Our modern trains have air conditioning which replaces the fresh air in each carriage every 6 to 9 minutes." So that's lots more services to be late.
Uni signs charter for race equality. Winchester University has signed the Race Equality Charter, REC, to demonstrate its commitment to tackling inequalities within the higher education sector. The announcement marks Stephen Lawrence Day, April the 22nd, which commemorates the anniversary of his murder in 1993. The Race Equality Charter aims to improve the representation, progression and success of minority ethnic staff and students within higher education, with awards given to institutions which develop initiatives and solutions to address this. Assistant Vice Chancellor Sam Jones, who leads the university's Race Equality Action Group, said, "As a values-driven university committed to social justice, we are determined to provide equal opportunities for all our staff and students, regardless of their background. Racial inequality exists, and we recognise that we must play a role in actively addressing any societal, systemic, and everyday racism."
A rather depressing article about £40 million stolen from county residents. Fraudsters have stolen more than £40 million from Hampshire residents during the coronavirus pandemic, figures have revealed. Blimey, that's a lot, isn't it? In Hampshire, 12,334 incidents of fraud and cybercrime were reported from the start of February last year to the end of March this year, according to data from Action Fraud. The value of the crimes amounted to £40.4 million, the equivalent of around 9,528 each day. Criminals have taken advantage of the rise in internet purchases as well as concerns over health and well-being through the crisis, says Action Fraud. Hampshire Police said that cyber criminals have been targeting social media users and accounts during the last 12 months. They say that this is more prevalent now as people's digital footprint has increased and people have spent longer online due to the global pandemic. James Adnett, Digital Intelligence Investigation Protect Officer at Hampshire Constabulary's Cybercrime Unit, said, "We're often told not to respond to cold calls or suspicious-looking emails, and we wouldn't give large sums of money to a stranger. Yet hacking into an individual's social media account gives the offender access to a lot of personal information, including that of the friends of that hacked account, which could open the floodgates to hundreds of possible victims. The two most common goals for the criminals are convincing friends to either lend them money, because their online banking isn't working and they need to make an urgent payment, or help them get back into another account online, such as an email account. This results in the friends' emails and social media accounts also being hacked. One Southampton MP has said the internet users must be on guard at all times. I'd always recommend checking everything before agreeing to anything.
Cathedral to reopen visitor attractions. Winchester Cathedral has remained open as a place of worship for prayer, private prayer and reflection. Now, in a couple of weeks' time, visitors will be welcomed back following government guidance that indoor visitor attractions can open from the 17th of May. In the next phase of its reopening, and having been awarded the Good to Go industry standard by Visit Britain, visitors will be invited back after many months to explore 15 centuries of English history, heritage and architecture. Tours and exhibitions, including the famous Tower Tour and the Kings and Scribes, the Birth of a Nation exhibition, will also be available to the public once again. The Cathedral Cafe is now open for takeaway, including hot and cold drinks, scones, cakes and pastries, which can be enjoyed in the outdoor seating that is available in the garden and open air terrace. The gift shop is also open, selling a wide range of unique gifts and souvenirs. Chief Operating Officer Alison Evans said, "We're delighted to be reopening more of our facilities to visitors in the coming weeks. The team is excited to welcome people back so that they can enjoy the heritage of building and its rich history, which makes Winchester Cathedral so unique and special. We have always been committed to delivering an exceptional visitor experience, and great care has been taken to ensure everyone's safety. The Christmas market is also expected to return in November."
Resident poet planned for city centre. Winchester is set to have its own professional resident poet as the city comes back to life. The Poetry Festival has launched a brand new campaign to raise funds to establish a poet on the high street. Whoever is selected will perform across the district for 6 months starting in June. They'll use poetry, digital or reading material. Stephen Boyce, former chair of Winchester Poetry Festival, said, "We need your help. We want to use poetry to rejuvenate the city centre and to spread joy, understanding and a shared love of our city. While we've secured in-principle funding from a range of partners, Winchester Poetry Festival now needs everyone's help to raise the final sum to enable us to draw down the funding available to us. This innovative and engaging programme aims to work with Winchester's people, businesses and communities through a journey of expression, imagination and creativity." Jane Bryant, incoming chair, added, "The Community Heritage Poet in Residence, our poet on the high street, will work with schools, young people and the community at large to inspire creativity, to lift our spirits and to animate the city centre with poetry throughout the summer."
MP meets transport police. Winchester MP Steve Bryant joined officers from the British Transport Police at Winchester train station as they carried out an important county lines operation. Alongside Detective Superintendent Gareth Williams, he was taken through the work of the special team, including detection dogs, in combating the practice. County lines is the term used where illegal drugs are transported from one area to another, often across police and local authority boundaries, usually by children or vulnerable people who are coerced into it by gangs. Speaking after the visit, Steve Bryant said, "After 10 years in this role, I am not easily shocked by things, but it never ceases to amaze me what I hear. County lines drugs running into places like Winchester is a menace, and British Transport Police team are doing superb work in trying to disrupt it. I welcome operations such as these and have this week discussed the ongoing funding with them with our Home Secretary. It's important that the police are tough and out in the open, showing a strong but supportive face."
This item is about a lady enjoying her 100th birthday. Helen sees 788 cards for her 100th. A woman with strong ancestral connections to Jane Austen has celebrated her 100th birthday at a Winchester care home. Helen Lefroy is a descendant of Jane's friend Anne Lefroy, whose nephew Tom was reputedly a romantic suitor of the famous novelist. Ahead of the centenary occasion, staff at Colton Cares South St Catherine's View issued a community appeal inviting to people to send in cards and greetings. Companionship team leader Laura Sheldrake said the final count was 788 cards. We're amazed at how many turned up, so much so that Helen has spent an entire week celebrating her birthday. Our contacts in the community have truly outdone themselves. The birthday greetings began with cards and a gift hamper from King's School. Children and staff at Hairstock Primary School then sent cards and a birthday certificate and even a headteacher's award. This was swiftly followed by cards and gifts from Topps Day Nursery, Osborne School, St Peter's Primary School and Highclere Castle. There's a letter from the Mayor of Winchester, cards from the Jane Austen Society and books from the Jane Austen Museum. Among family and other well-wishers, there were cards not only from Hampshire but across the world, including Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the USA and Abu Dhabi. Reflecting on her ancestry at the time, Helen said, "We know that Anne Lefroy was a very able lady, interesting and confident, and she and Jane had a friendship with long literary discussions, even though there was quite an age gap between them." And the item is accompanied by a lovely photograph of Helen looking remarkably well, I would have said, for her 100 years, and surrounded by hundreds of birthday cards. Well, happy birthday to her.
Debenhams given official closing date. Debenhams confirmed that the 27 of its stores in England and Wales, including Winchester and Fareham, will close for the final time on Sunday, May the 2nd. The High Street department store reopened after lockdown to sell off its remaining stock with discounts of up to 80% on fashion and home and up to 70% on beauty and fragrance. A reduced staff is overseeing the final sale, with a member on the door keeping tabs on numbers of people inside. Much of the stock has been sold and some parts of the store have already been taped off. Many of the display cabinets are empty of items, including the perfumes, clothing and homeware sections. One shopper, Mary Barton of Romsey Road, Southampton, said, "It's very sad that it's going, as it's been one of my favourite shops. I'm looking for a bargain, but also just to say goodbye." A spokesperson for Debenhams said, "With such great bargains on offer, it's no wonder our stock is selling out incredibly fast. Time is running out for shoppers to take advantage of the incredible discounts being offered."
Steam Railway's latest attraction goes loco. Families returning to the Watercress line this spring will be chuffed to discover a brand new locomotive playground. The themed play area at Ropley Station will help the railway get back on track now the lockdown restrictions are lifted. The new attraction has been modelled on Southern Railway School's class locomotive number 30925 Cheltenham. Youngsters can let off steam exploring the replica train, which features a tunnel, a slide, a fireman's pole and lots to climb on. In the play area, there's a basket swing and a climbing wagon for toddlers. Seating is provided on a luggage trolley. The playground has been funded with a £40,000 grant from South Western Railway's Custom and Communities Improvement Fund and £15,000 from the government's Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport COVID Recovery Fund. Visitors will also get hot and cold food and drinks at the new Tea Junction Cafe, situated next to the playground and the picnic area. The Watercress line is planning a full calendar of activities, starting with the return of Day Out with Thomas, to run from Saturday, May the 29th, until Sunday, June the 6th.
Alcohol licence approved. Winchester licensing chiefs have approved plans for an Alsford cafe to have an alcohol licence despite more than a dozen objections. Party at the Mill has been operating at the station mill since December and wants to be able to serve alcohol from between 8 a.m. and 11 p.m. every day of the week. 15 neighbours raised objections, fearing it would lead to antisocial behaviour. But cafe owner Kirby Sinclair said it was not a boozer and there was a misconception about the business. He told the licensing committee, "It's a nice, relaxing place to have a glass of wine with lunch. It is not a party venue and not a boozer. There will be no stand-around bar." Mr. Sinclair said that it would only be open Monday to Wednesday evening for private hire, open to the public Thursday to Saturday and closed Sunday evening. Objector Mr. A. Wallace of Station Approach told the licensing committee, "We are very concerned about the application, especially as it seems very long hours. It will upset our health and well-being. No thought has been given to anyone living near Station Mill." The licensing committee approved the premises licence but added conditions that no alcohol be consumed outside after 9 p.m. and that the doors remain closed after that time.
Festival fails in funding target. A festival has refunded a five-figure sum in crowdfunding after only meeting half its target. Gray's Festival in Twyford has refunded almost £10,000 worth of donations after its crowdfunding campaign was unsuccessful. The Music and Food Festival was only able to raise 50% of its overall target. The campaign was aimed at helping to fund the relaunch of the event, which hasn't taken place since 2018. But having failed to raise enough to meet their target, organisers have said the event will be put on hold for another year. Now, though, a new crowdfunder has been launched with the hope of bringing back the festival in 2022. Organisers have set a £2,000 target for the fundraiser, which is aimed at helping to recover ongoing costs for the event. The campaign has currently raised £90 of its target, with organisers set to keep all pledges made regardless of whether they hit their target. The organiser said, "We gave it a good shot, and although we only hit 50%, I think there's a lot of positives to take away from that campaign. The number of people that pledged their support was good, and it was high, and it was strong, and we had some interest from local business as well. I just think ultimately, due to the pandemic, that uncertainty has muted the confidence of some locals. It's disappointing, but we're keeping an eye on next year, and we've launched a very small campaign."
Flick joins volunteer litter pickers. Meon Valley's MP joined the volunteer litter pickers at Bishop's Waltham at the weekend for a local clean-up. Flick Drummond spent time on Saturday morning bagging up rubbish on the B2177 Winchester Road with local residents Tom Bristow and Mike Hughes. The morning was arranged by the Litter Partnership, which was founded by Tom to bring together local people, councils, schools, businesses and military personnel to tackle litter. Winchester City Council's street scene contractor, Ed Verde, which works closely with the Litter Partnership, provided a member of staff and a van to ensure that everything was done safely. "Just like so many people, I'm infuriated by litterers, but I'm really happy that so many volunteers across Meon Valley who care so much about their community that they are prepared to give up their spare time to clean it up," said Flick Drummond. "Many thanks to the Litter Partnership for the work it is doing to keep Bishop's Waltham and all and other parts of the Winchester district litter-free. We managed to fill Edverde's van with several bags of rubbish and other discarded objects too. Meon Valley is a beautiful place and I would like to ask everyone to put their litter in bins or to take it home." Tom added, "I'm grateful to Flick for helping us keep our wonderful countryside clean and tidy."
Former pub destined for the wrecking ball. A former pub is destined for the wrecking ball and is to be replaced by seven flats. Plans to demolish the Black Horse Inn, Colden Common, have been submitted to Winchester City Council. If approved, 2 one-bed and 5 two-bedroom properties will be built. The existing car park will be retained with space for 10 vehicles. The pub was run for many years by Mike King, also a Coldon Common parish councillor, for 30 years, who died in 2014 after a lengthy battle with cancer. Applicant Richard Comstive, whose address is listed as Hyde Street in Winchester, is also seeking permission for a communal garden area to the rear of the flats. In 2014, the pub closed and was turned into a three-bedroom home. According to whatpub.com, the landlord passed away and his widow, Wendy Pearson, decided she didn't want to take on the running of the pub, but also didn't want to leave the building. A decision on the plans is expected to be made by the end of May.
The first peregrine chicks have hatched at the cathedral. Keith Betton, County Recorder and Chair of Hampshire Ornithological Society, said that they'd hatched overnight on April the 20th, 21st. The two other eggs should hatch soon, he said. Winnie, that's presumably the name of the peregrine falcon, has been very edgy for the last day and will have been because the chicks started calling from inside the unhatched eggs in the day before they're about to break free. Chester, that's presumably the male peregrine falcon, has also been around a lot, so he will be aware of the changes. Winnie has been eating the empty eggshells to get rid of them, and it also provides her with useful calcium. Winnie will be keeping them warm, with Chester bringing in the food for her to rip up into small bits. He will also do some of the feeding if she lets him. For the next week, Winnie will stay with them, and then she will too go hunting for prey as they grow fast. Keith added, no amount of food seems to be enough. So that's a nice story on which to end our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Sue Frayne, Anne Brew and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. Thanks to our reader, Richard Martin.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And just a reminder that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problems with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number, which is on the key fob attached to the memory stick.